Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of Umicore's half-year results for 2013. I will comment on the evolution of our business in the first half, and then I will hand over to Filip Platteeuw, our CFO, who will cover the financial aspects. After Filip's intervention, I will open up the call for any questions that you may have. If we start looking at the highlights of the first half, we can see that revenues were stable compared to the first half of last year, and actually grew by 4% when compared to the second half of 2012. The sequential development of quarterly revenues over the past year and a half could be seen as an indication that demand in many of our end markets has started to stabilize. This is a positive evolution, although there are no clear signs yet of a sustained pickup in activity in Europe in particular. From an earnings perspective, the improved volumes have been more than offset by the impact of a less favorable product and regional mix in certain of our businesses, and this mixed effect was most pronounced in Catalysis. We have also felt the effects of lower metal prices. All in all, recurring EBIT was down by 15% compared to 2012, compared to the first half of 2012. If we look at EBITDA, the decrease was less pronounced than for EBIT, as this metric excludes the effect of higher depreciation charges that we incurred as a result of recent investments. Our commitment to long-term strategic growth projects remains as strong as ever. R&D and investments in production and technological capabilities are continuing at a high level. I will talk more about these projects in a moment. At the same time, of course, we continue to adjust our cost base to support the competitiveness of our businesses, and we continue to selectively increase prices. We keep performing very well from a cash flow generation point of view, and this enabled us to achieve a further reduction in net debt and a further reduction of our gearing levels. To conclude with the highlights, I would like to say that we will pay out an interim dividend of 0.50 per share, and that is fully in line with our existing dividend policy. The outlook for the full year confirms the earnings guidance that I gave back in April. Although it is premature to talk of a sustained recovery, there is some improvement in demand and operating conditions, which should offset the effect of lower metal prices. On balance, I continue to see full-year recurring EBIT coming in a 10% range between 300 million euro and 330 million euro. If we now look at the results in more detail, you can see from the graph on slide four that revenues have been largely stable year-on-year. This reflects a combination of volume growth in Catalysis and Energy Materials being counterbalanced by a decrease in revenues in Recycling, and that was largely the result of lower metal prices. Compared to the second half of 2012, revenues show a favorable progression, and here we can see some indications of improving demand in a number of our business units. As I mentioned before, it is too early to tell whether demand has indeed started to recover in a sustainable manner. We see many customers continuing to manage their inventories as tightly as possible, which often translates in short ordering patterns and sometimes even in erratic ordering patterns. That is why I prefer to use the words indication of improving demand, as we are yet to gather firm evidence of a recovery. From a profitability perspective, the uptick in sales volumes has not yet translated itself into better profitability for a couple of reasons. The first is that the overall product and geographical mix is less favorable. If we take automotive catalyst as an example, the overall volume growth was a result of growth in Asia and South America, more than compensating for the declining car production in Europe. And as you know, because of different engine configurations and emission norms, European business tends to come at a premium to most other regions. This mixed effect has been exacerbated by a reduced market share of diesel cars in Europe. The other factor is lower prices for precious and other metals. This has led to lower recycling margins in the recycling business group, as well as in several of the recycling activities elsewhere in the company that treat metal-containing residues, zinc, for example. There was a difference in percentage terms between the EBIT and EBITDA developments, with the higher depreciation charges weighing on EBIT somewhat more than last year, following the recent completion of a number of investments. As you know, we have taken steps to adapt our production footprint in those business units where market conditions have been the most challenging, particularly in energy materials. The benefits of these measures have started to accrue to the bottom line, and this is one of the reasons that the performance in energy materials has shown an uptick compared to the second half of last year. Overall, the return on capital employed was 14.5%. Moving to slide number 6, you can see that we have maintained the pace of investment in long-term growth initiatives. R&D expenditures have been stable for a couple of years now, with a consistent focus on catalysis, rechargeable battery materials, and recycling, and this is fully in line with the strategic priorities of the company. Our efforts, I should also add, are well balanced, with resources being channeled towards process innovation, for instance, in recycling, as well as the development of new products. Although CapEx was well up compared to the same period in 2012, the overall rhythm of investment is unchanged, and full-year capital expenditures should be roughly in line with those of the previous year. We are completing some major investments in rechargeable battery materials and have ongoing projects to expand our capacities and capabilities in the other business groups, in particular in catalysis and recycling. I will elaborate on these projects in a moment. If we turn to the people-related aspects, I'm pleased to report that our safety performance continues to improve. Both the frequency and severity of accidents decreased a bit further, and we stepped up our safety improvement programs around the world as we pursue the ultimate objective of making Umicore a zero-accident workplace. Looking at the evolution of the number of colleagues working at Umicore, you can see that the numbers are down by 113 in the fully consolidated companies. And the main reason for this decrease is the footprint adjustments that we have made in energy materials. We have also seen the number of employees at associate companies come down by 45%, and this is mainly linked to Element 6 abrasives. We continue to look at costs in a targeted way, and each business unit is adapting to its own market realities. This can involve reductions in the size and scope of production infrastructure, or, in some instances, stepping out of certain product lines. Given the diversity of our businesses, I continue to see this as the most effective approach. Let's now stop off in each business group to take a look at the evolution of business in a bit more detail. Turning first to catalysis, and I'm now on slide number 10, you can see that revenues were up by 3%. This reflected some volume growth year on year, as well as the impact of the first consolidation of the Umicore Shokubai activities, although this consolidation effect was largely counterbalanced by lower pass-through costs. Recurring EBIT was down 9%, mainly as a result of a less favorable product and regional mix in automotive catalysts, as I mentioned previously. In that business unit, Umicore slightly outperformed the market in Europe as we were present on some of the better-selling platforms. The European market remains in difficulty, though, and overall car production was down by 4% in the first half of this year after having declined by 5% in 2012. The product mix also became less favorable for catalyst producers, with the share of diesel-powered cars falling to 44% of the total market. This compares to approximately 50% not so long ago. The North American market continued to grow, while ore sales volumes there were largely stable year on year. The market growth benefited in particular Japanese car producers, and we are relatively less present with these producers today, and they regained some of the market share they had lost to their American counterparts in recent years. Our sales volumes in South America were in line with the strong growth of the market, where production was up by 15%. We also grew faster than the market in Asia. Car production was up 12% in China, and our sales volumes there were slightly ahead of the market. In Japan, we managed to grow sales in a market which contracted by 13%, and our sales volumes in Korea were largely stable year on year. The precious metals chemistry business continued to perform well, although the product mix was somewhat less favorable due to lower demand from the life science industry. Turning to the various investment programs that we have in the Catalysis business group, you can see that the efforts in automotive catalysts for light-duty applications are progressing well. On top of the previously announced capacity and capability expansions in Germany, India, Japan, and Brazil, which are all making good progress, we also announced today that we will be adding a new production line in South Korea. The dedicated production infrastructure in France for heavy-duty diesel catalysts has now been commissioned, and we are qualifying the line as we speak, and it should be ready for production ramp-up shortly. We have, in the meanwhile, started the construction of a second line in Florange on the same HDD site to cater for upcoming demand under existing HDD contracts. The new HDD facility in China is also nearing completion. Finally, the construction of a new facility for precious metals chemistry in the U.S. is making headway and should be ready to start production in the first half of next year. In energy materials, and I'm now moving to slide 13, revenues have shown an improvement both compared to the same period last year and sequentially. This is largely due to continued increases in sales of cathode materials for rechargeable batteries. The profitability has started to look somewhat more positive compared to the previous 6 months as the result of cost reduction measures starts to come through to the bottom line. In rechargeable battery materials, we continue to see strong growth in demand for high-density lithium-cobalt materials that are used in portable electronics and particularly so in high-end applications such as tablet computers and smartphones, which continue to sell very well. Although volumes are developing well, the pricing pressure in this segment remains high and demand patterns can be somewhat bumpy. The sales of NMC materials for hybrid and electric cars continue to increase. Our technology leadership position in these materials enabled us to qualify for platforms that are due to be introduced in the coming years. This comes on top of the 15 or so platforms which rely on Umicore materials already today. In electro-optic materials, we saw a mixed picture in terms of demand. Deliveries of substrates for space applications and chemicals used in fiber optics were up, while demand for lens blanks for thermal imaging and products for LEDs was lower. Overall, the performance of the unit started to see some of the benefits of the footprint adjustments that had been made in the previous year. In thin film products, sales volumes and revenues increased as a result of the improved levels of demand from customers who make touch panel displays and other screens. The discontinuation of aluminum zinc oxide production in Liechtenstein also started to produce some benefits for the overall performance of the business unit. In terms of investments in energy materials, the main growth axis remains in rechargeable battery materials. The NMC expansion in South Korea is now completed and will start producing in the coming months. The other two main investments, the new precursor capacity in Korea and the expansion of cathode material production in China, should come on stream towards the end of this year. In cobalt and specialty materials, the investment in upgrading the production facility for fine cobalt powders in Belgium will come on stream during the course of next year. Moving now to performance materials on slide 15, revenues were largely stable year on year in that business group. Recurring EBIT was slightly down year on year, but showed some improvement compared to the second half of last year. Market conditions, in particular, continue to be challenging for the building products business unit, particularly in Central and Southern Europe. Although sales volumes increased in the second quarter, this could not offset the impact of the harsh winter conditions in Europe, which meant that construction activity was much slower than normal in the first few months of the year. Revenues in zinc chemicals were up year on year due to an improvement in overall demand for zinc used in applications such as ceramics, paints, tires, and batteries. However, recycling margins were affected by a reduced availability of zinc secondary materials from the galvanizing industry, in Europe in particular, and were also affected by a lower zinc price. In technical materials, we recorded stable revenues with higher sales for electrical applications offset by lower demand for brazing alloys. In platinum engineered materials, revenues were also stable, and the business started to benefit from some production efficiency and cost improvements. The electroplating activities continued to perform well, and the introduction of new products for use in applications such as LEDs and fashion jewelry is proving a success. Our associate Element 6 Abrasives recorded lower revenues due to reduced demand in most market segments, and this resulted in a lower contribution to Umicore's earnings. The company also announced its intention to discontinue production at its plant in China as part of a move out of the low-end grit market that will also create a greater focus on higher-end diamonds and other abrasives. We also have some sizable investment projects underway in performance materials. The expansion of our zinc oxide operations in India has now been completed, and the facility is currently ramping up the new production capacity to meet growing orders from customers, particularly for use in tire production in India. In building products, the investment in France to produce high value-added surface-treated zinc materials remains on track for completion next year, and Element 6 Abrasives recently opened a new innovation center near Oxford in the UK. In recycling, revenues were down by 10%, and recurring EBIT reached 102 million euro, which was down 16% year on year. Return on capital employed reached a healthy level of 63%. Revenues and earnings in precious metals refining activities were both lower. This was due primarily to the effect of lower metal prices, particularly specialty metals. Overall, the supply market remained strong, though, and treatment charges were higher in absolute value. This was the result of our ability to process higher volumes following some debottlenecking investments that were made in Hoboken earlier this year, when the smelter was shut down for maintenance. In the industrial residues segment, which constitutes the bulk of our supply, we are constantly optimizing the supply mix, and again, we're able to use our unique flexibility to our advantage. We have multiple sourcing options in this segment, and even in a dynamic environment like today's, we have managed to secure new contracts which expand and strengthen our supply portfolio. The market for end-of-life materials was somewhat less buoyant than in the previous year. This was the case for low-grade e-scrap materials, where competition is tighter, and as a result, is tighter as a result of capacity expansions, particularly in Europe. It is worth repeating, though, that we are most competitive in the treatment of the more complex high-grade electronic scrap, and our supply position in that subsegment remains very strong. The supply of spent AutoCAD remains subdued due to the combined effect of lower availability, possibly as a result of lower platinum price, and more intensive competition for this type of material. In jewelry and industrial metals, the main swing factor compared to last year has been a lower gold price, which has led to a reduced availability of customer residues for the recycling activities. On the product side, it was a mixed picture with higher demand for gold and silver investment bars, as well as products used in fashion jewelry, in contrast to lower orders for silver-based products used in certain industrial applications. Although market volatility presented good trading conditions for precious metals management, this was in contrast to lower deliveries of metals for industrial applications, and overall revenues were lower year on year. Finally, looking at the longer-term development of the battery recycling activity, I'm satisfied with the progress so far, as our marketing efforts are securing additional contracts for us in future years. The investment profile in recycling confirms a strong focus on the debottlenecking initiatives at the Hoboken plant. These are now starting to reap benefits, as recent investments are resulting in gradual additions to our capacity and flexibility. As I mentioned on previous occasions, there will be another shutdown in the second half of this year, which will allow us to carry out further debottlenecking investments. This gradual expansion work is taking place in parallel to more significant long-term expansion projects for the recycling activities. We are now in the process of narrowing down our options and fine-tuning technical plans. In the jewelry and industrial metals business, the expansion of the silver recycling and refining operations in Thailand has been completed, and the expansion of recycling and refining operations in Germany is scheduled to come on stream in 2015. I would like to now hand over the line to Philip, who will talk you through the financial elements.
Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon, everybody. Let's first take a look at the non-recurring elements in our results, and I'm on slide 20. The overall non-recurring result at EBIT level was minus 23 million, with about half of this amount being restructuring provisions linked to Element 6 abrasives and its intention to close its Suzhou plant, as Mark already mentioned. We also took additional environmental provisions to cover remediation of historic pollution around some of our sites. If we take the tax effects of these amounts and the non-cash IAS 39 number into consideration, we arrive at the 26 million impact on the level of our net results. Moving to slide 21, as Mark mentioned, the cash flows in the first half of the year remained strong and more than sufficient to self-fund our substantial development efforts. From our net operating cash flow of 224 million, we derived over 100 million of net cash flow before financing. This strong cash flow, on slide 22, you see that allows us to further reduce our net financial debt from 222 million at the end of 2012 to 190 million end of June. This notwithstanding the capex amount, which was again substantial, of 120 million, and a cash return to shareholders of near 90 million in the form of both dividends and share buybacks. Cash networking capital requirements remained stable over this period. Also, word on our tax rate. Our recurring effective tax rate for the period was 23.3%, which is up from the 20.6% that we had in 2012. And this is in line with our earlier guidance for a gradually increasing tax rate as certain tax credits fade out. Moving to slide 23, our capital structure remains obviously very healthy. The net debt of 190 million, as mentioned, represents a net gearing ratio of less than 10% and a very comfortable average debt to recurring EBITDA ratio of 0.4 times. In addition, our average weighted interest rate over this period decreased to 1.3%. This capital structure allows us to comfortably fund future growth and continue to return cash to our shareholders, and this irrespective of current economic headwinds. Slide 24, we show our EPS, and our recurring EPS of 1 euro per share obviously reflects the evolution in EBIT and also takes into account the slightly higher average number of shares than over the previous period. In line with our dividend policy, an interim dividend of 50 euro cents, which equates to half of the previous year's full-year dividend, will be paid out in early September. As you know, we've also been buying back our shares on the market in the first half of the year, and we purchased more than 750,000 shares, which equates to 0.6% of the total shares in issue. The position today is that we hold 7.2% of our shares in treasury, with an authorization, as you know, to hold up to 10%. Mark, I now hand back to you for the wrap-up.
Thank you, Philippe. As you know, the economy remains quite fragile, especially in Europe, and I don't think we can talk yet of any pronounced or sustained recovery. However, we have seen some stabilization in number of end markets, and this has been reflected in a sequential improvement in revenue generation for Umicore. The profitability picture in the first half was somewhat less positive, though, as a result of a less supportive product and regional mix. And as I mentioned previously, we are continuing to take selective steps to address profitability in several business units. As Philippe highlighted, we are in a strong financial position, and the positive cash flows that we are generating enable us to remain fully committed to our long-term growth projects. Given the way that things have developed since I gave a full year guidance back in April, I see no need to make any change to the outlook. I continue to see the full year recurring EBIT coming in a 10% range of between 300 and 330 million euro. And with that, I would like now to turn the line over for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. Our first question today comes from Tony Jones from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, Mark. Thanks for taking my question. I've got three. Firstly, on CapEx, are you able to provide a rough indication of what proportion of new capacity you might have some sort of visibility on or some pre-agreed new supply contracts? Secondly, in recycling, the EBIT decrease year on year was clearly much lower than the change in turnover. So trying to reconcile that, is it right for us to assume that the Umicore refining charges per metal is much less sensitive than metal price changes themselves, or is there something else going on? And then finally, on the hedging book, with metal prices being so volatile over the last year or so, are you able to give a bit of an update in terms of what proportion of contracts are hedged? How does it compare to the norm? And, that's fine. Sorry. Thanks.
Okay. Tony, I will have to ask you to repeat the first question because it didn't arrive very loud and clear here.
Yeah, sorry about that. On the new CapEx, so I think I counted up nearly 20 new sort of new growth projects. Are you able to sort of give us any sense of what number of these projects or even sort of rough proportion are being built for agreed contracts? Or is it just that you're building on these sites and you're just hoping for the best?
Okay. Thank you for indeed repeating the question. I would say that you may have different situations in catalysis and in rechargeable battery materials. And I should say actually in automotive-related businesses, The capacity additions are supported by contracts that have been secured already. This is also true in HDD, by the way. And this is, of course, a very characteristic of the automotive, of the way the automotive business is working, because you know that materials or products get specified and qualified a number of years before SOP. So you have quite a degree of visibility on the production capacities that you will need 2 to 3 or 4 years down the road. Of course, without guarantee for the volumes, that remains based on estimates and forecasts of your customers. But basically, the vast majority of the capex, the growth capex that we are spending and that is related to automotive or HDD business, either in catalysis or in battery materials, is supported by contracts. In other divisions, you will have a mixed picture of contracts or basically adjustments in anticipation of growing market demand. And recycling is a bit different because there the capacity additions take such a long time to implement that typically the projects, the investment projects, run in parallel with contract discussions and negotiations with existing or potential new customers. So it's a bit of a mixed picture, but I would say the today, given the weight of automotive-related investments, the vast majority of what we have in terms of investments would be contract-related or backed by contracts.
Thank you.
In terms of recycling, if you allow us, we will dig into the question of the difference that you highlighted between the turnover and the EBIT evolution and revert in due course. And then on as far as hedging is concerned, we have, I mean, as we speak, quite a bit of protection in place for the remainder of 2013, quite obviously, because we are already in the third quarter of this year, and contracts are in place, materials has arrived to a large extent, etc. So the level of predictability is very high and enables a high degree of hedging. As you know, for the coming years, the degree of protection is somewhat less, because it is also tied to the percentage of the supply that is already contracted. And as you know, we tend to hedge more and for a longer period of time when prices are high and in a upward trend, and we tend to slow down the hedging programs when prices are declining. So this being said, I cannot tell you whether this is normal or out of the ordinary. This is mostly in line or this is fully in line with the way we have worked in the past many years. So there is nothing abnormal about either the percentage of the supply that is contracted and the proportion thereof which is hedged.
Thanks, Mark. Can I just ask a very brief follow-up which relates to a couple of these questions? So is it right to think then that the mix in the Hoboken asset then, there's more secondary metals being processed than so PGM, and is it right to think that that's likely to continue?
The Hoboken flow sheet involves a lot of secondary metals indeed, and because this is one of our key strengths and one of our key competitive differentiators indeed. Yeah, but I will not, I mean, the tonnages are not comparable anyways because of the different I mean, the values are completely can be completely different, but clearly, as we discussed on previous occasions, secondary metals are very important to us indeed.
Thanks very much.
Our next question comes from Mutlu Gundogan from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my questions. I've got three on recycling. First question is on slide 17 in your presentation. And when you say that residues more than offset the decrease in end-of-life materials, are you talking about volumes, sales, or earnings? And then secondly, also on recycling, could you talk a little bit about supply and demand for industrial byproducts? Because in your press release you state that you have secured new contracts that expand and strengthen the portfolio. Could you tell us what you mean by that? And then finally, could you update us on the dynamics in the market for e-scrap? I'm particularly interested how you were able to improve recycling charges while competition increased for low-grade materials. Thank you.
Okay, let me start with the last question because that's the one that is freshest in my mind. As you know, there are many, many different sub-segments in the e-scrap market. And so there is nothing like one single definition of and one type of e-scrap. It goes from very low grade and low precious metals containing components that are used in white goods, like in fridges, dishwashers, etc., to high grade printed circuit board in coming from given from very specific pieces of equipment, etc. You have e-scrap that is rich in copper, e-scrap that is poor in copper and rich in precious metals and all sorts of impurities. I mean, you have really a wide variety. Where we are most competitive is in a subsegment of the e-scrap market, which is really the stuff that is extremely complex to treat, because it contains a lot of impurities, organic and inorganic impurities, that many other people are not able to get out of their own flow sheet. This is what we call the high-grade materials. Typically, they also contain a lot of precious metals, but most importantly is the fact that they are extremely complex to treat because of the level of impurities, the number, the sheer number of substances that are included in type of e-scrap, and basically this is a market where competition is more limited than in the broader low-grade and very typically copper-rich e-scrap. This is a subsegment where competition is more limited because you don't have many people having the technical abilities to process all of these impurities in an appropriate manner. And our competitive position in that subsegment enabled us, first of all, to continue to secure significant volumes and a significant market share in that subsegment and continue to do that at very attractive margins and to drive prices that are basically a reflection of our both of our technical and market leadership position in that subsegment. If you look at the broader market of electronic scrap, the reality is indeed that competition is increasing because you have capacity that capacity expansion that has taken place in particular in Europe, and that's something that we commented on a number of months ago already. And typically, this is coming from copper smelters that are increasing their ability to take more e-scrap and more copper-rich, typically, material in their flow sheet. And this is creating, indeed, more pressure on the lower-grade e-scrap subsegment. Your other question on recycling was related to the strengthening of our contracts in non-ferrous residues. Yes, let me elaborate on that. This is a fairly dynamic environment in a way, but also a market segment or a number of market segments where you have a number of strong technical relationships which are being established between players in the non-ferrous industries, because some people have better abilities than others to treat certain types of residues. And so there are things that you do in-house and things that you outsource, because this is how you get the maximum value. Flow sheets at various players continue to evolve over time. People continue to invest, and Umicore is one of these players that are continuing to invest in capacity and capabilities. And this creates a certain level of dynamism in the marketplace, with contracts being negotiated all the time. And new opportunities popping up all the time, because residue streams tend to increase or tend to change in composition and require new recycling solutions. What I meant with the comment that was made regarding our position is that if you look at, and then of course you also have contracts that expire, contracts that are being renewed or not being renewed. What I meant is that on balance, if I look at the number of contracts that have expired and the volumes that have been secured through new contracts, we are better off than a while ago. And this is a logical evolution, of course, an important evolution, because as we grow capacity, as we debottleneck our recycling capacities, we also need more supply. And so this is what we meant. The non-ferrous residue market continues to be very supportive. We continue to, on balance, turn away materials, so we have still the ability to be very selective and optimize the mix of supplies that we process, and we continue to grow and strengthen our portfolio of contracts on balance. And then your first question was...
Yes, that was on slides. Yes,
indeed, the comment about... the end-of-life materials and the, well, that was meant in terms of volumes and, to a certain extent, revenues, indeed.
Okay. Thank you very much for your answers.
Our next question comes from Simon Fickling from Exane. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, Mark. Thanks for taking my questions. First one on working capital. Often in the past, when precious metal prices have come down, there's been a release of cash from working capital, which we didn't seem to see in the first half of this year. I wonder if there's something, some reason for that, and perhaps an expectation for the full year, just helping us to try and think what may happen in the cash flow statement for the full year. Secondly, on the recycling business, I think at Q1 for the division overall, revenues were down 4%, and I think for the first half, down 10%. Was there a sort of material change in momentum, sequential momentum, through the first half of the year, and sort of how you're seeing intake volumes going into the second half of the year so far? And finally, very briefly, diesel, that was quite a big jump down in the market share in Europe. Just your view whether that an element of that is structural or perhaps just cyclical, just to do with customer orders. Thank you.
Okay, I will ask Philippe to answer the first question regarding working capital, and I will take the next two questions.
Yes, on working capital, you're absolutely right that normally you would see that effect. Actually, when you look at the balance sheet and you calculate the working capital, you see that there's a reduction which has not detranslated yet in the cash flow, and that is a time lag effect. So when you look at the balance sheet, basically a lot of market-to-market positions that normally should indeed translate over basically the next months in the change in cash working capital.
Okay, let me now turn to your question about the momentum in recycling. No, there is no change in momentum in recycling. Suffice to say that there is quite a bit of versatility in the mix from one period to the other, and that you should not extrapolate from very short-term changes in mix and revenues. The momentum continues to be good, and actually the supply situation for the coming month remains very supportive and promising. so I can only remain positive in that respect. Coming to diesel, yes, there has been a further decline of the market share of diesel in Europe. If my recollection is correct, it was about 47% last year and 50% not so long ago before that. You have seen in Europe a move to smaller sized and gasoline engines in the past couple of years that was driven by changing economics of in certain cases, especially with diesel fuel becoming more expensive in a number of countries, and the tax advantage that had historically existed for diesel fuel to evaporate gradually, which is changing the total cost of ownership dynamics or economics based on which certain users decided in the past to buy diesel cars instead of gasoline cars. And in some countries, you also have had a number of subsidy programs that have somewhat distorted the picture and the relative market shares of gasoline engines and diesel cars. Is this structural? Difficult to say, because in a way, there is, in my opinion, a certain floor that is required in terms of diesel market share in the mix in Europe if car makers are to meet the CO2 regulations that have recently come into force. And with diesel coming at a 20 to 25% CO2 advantage to comparable gas engines, it is hard to imagine that this can be that the market share of diesel can fall much lower than where it is today without significant financial damage to the car producers. So I think there is probably a natural floor that has been established through the CO2 regulations in the region, and so difficult to make out today whether there is a structural trend or whether this will stabilize around these levels, or will diesel regain some market share when the economy gets better. Difficult to make out, I must say.
Great, thanks.
Our next question comes from Evgenia Molotova from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks a lot for taking my questions. I just firstly want to clarify on hedging, because just several things. As far as I understand, your hedging gains or losses, you consider them as part of ongoing operating profit, and they are included into the EBIT of recycling division. And so that if you can confirm that. The second part is, in your note 6 in the financial statements, you are talking about cash inflow of 14.5 million from forward contracts on the commodities. So I guess this is benefits from the metal hedging that we had in H1. And I just wanted to clarify whether it is reflected so in EBIT, because you don't exclude it from the operating result. And then finally, as far as I remember, your policy is to hedge both at risk and free metal. And going forward, you said that you are reducing a portion of hedging. Is it so you basically have some view on precious metals? That why you want to reduce the amount of hedging, because you think that they would recover, and you want to take a bet on precious metals or not? And the last one about the quality of electronic scrap, because I do understand that the copper smelters can actually take up to 5% of their streams from electronic scraps, which you said are low-grade, high copper-containing, and it will not disturb their production process. However, major capacity additions in Europe that you are mentioning, I assume it's Boliden and Aurubis, are actually targeting, as far as I understand from talking to the companies, high-quality scrap, and they would like to extract precious metals and not copper mainly. And I understand that their abilities are very rather limited versus yours, and they will be able to extract, for example, only gold and silver and platinum and not palladium and rhodium. However, they are targeting similar scrap markets. So if you could please comment on that as well. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, the hedging is fully part of the operating margins and therefore included in the EBIT, whether it's transactional or any other hedging, and whether it's currency or metal related. Indeed, the second question was regarding the
financial note.
You refer to the 12.7 million.
Yeah, because in this 12.7, you are saying that 14.5 out of this 12.7 is because of the forward contracts for commodities, which I assume is a hedging gain on your metal exposure.
So typically, I mean, the strategic hedges are basically mark-to-market. We have different types of strategic hedges. We have hedges that are cash-settled, not cash-settled. So part of the strategic hedges that fall under the cash flow hedge accounting are mark-to-market in the equity, and that's what you see in the consolidated statement of comprehensive income. But so that's indeed, that is related to the market value of part of the strategic hedges, but not the full amount.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, indeed, this is only part of the picture for the reasons that Philip explained. Now, indeed, you're right. When metal prices are declining and lower, we hedge less and for a more limited period of time, which can be indeed interpreted, as you rightfully said, as that we have a view on precious metals, indeed on precious metals price. And in the long term, our view is that the fundamentals remain supportive because of the supply situations or the supply constraints that are typically present in the PGM industry, and the fact that demand will continue to be supported by the growth in automotive applications, in particular, the increased demand for HDD as Euro 6 and other norms in other regions come into play, etc. So indeed, we see good fundamentals in the long term supporting the trends in precious metals prices, and that's why we have this approach of hedging more when prices are high and hedging less when prices are down, because we expect that this will be a temporary effect.
Sure, of course.
Now, coming to your last question about the quality of e-scrap, what you say is correct, but only part of the answer, because it's not just about extracting precious metals, and not just about gold and silver or palladium. The fact is that in the most complex pieces of e-scrap, you can have 20-25 different substances, of which two or three of them would be precious metals, and the rest still has to be processed, refined, neutralized, whatever it is, and this is where Umicore has basically unique technology and has the most competitive position. And it is true, indeed, that copper smelters can process some of these materials, but then the more impurities these materials have, the more it has to be diluted. And that's the difference between what they do and what we do, and that's the difference between a base metal flow sheet that can treat e-scrap and a recycling flow sheet that can treat copper.
Sure, I understand that this is for a simple copper smelter. What I mean, for example, capacity increase, which was done by Boliden, they did add additional smelter in order to be able to treat more complex electronic scrap materials. And as far as I understand, their technology is more sophisticated than the technology of just simple copper smelters. And I understand that you still have competitive advantage, but aren't you competing for the same feedstock streams?
Sometimes we're competing for the same supply streams, and as I mentioned, in the most complex supply segment, we have a very strong competitive position and technology leadership, and that's why our supply position remains so strong. I'm not saying we're not competing. I'm saying there are segments where we are much better, and there are segments where they are better.
Sure, I understand. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Andrew Stosh from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, good afternoon. Actually, apologies, I was distracted on the previous question. I wanted to ask the same one, which was the hedging EBIT number. Was that included in the first half EBIT for recycling or not? I missed the answer to that, so that's the first question. The second question is, I see from your slide, Mark, that a number of projects still going ahead in recycling as you've planned, so in particular in Bangkok and in Germany. Where are we with the larger project in recycling and your thoughts on that particular one? Thank you.
So, Andrew, let me start with the easy one. The answer to the first question was yes. The impact of hedges, whether it's currency or metals, is included in the operating margins and in the EBIT, therefore. And then let's move to the more complicated question about the larger expansion projects in recycling. In the previous call, I think it was on the occasion of the Q1 update, I talked about the fact that we're making progress in evaluating a number of options and that we should soon be in a position to make a decision about where to go with the larger recycling project. I have to tell you a bit more of the same today. We are in the process of narrowing down our options. So we are indeed still making a number of technical and feasibility studies and location studies. We're in the process of narrowing down our options, so things are becoming more tangible for us. And hopefully I should be able to tell you more and to give more direction and possibly even quantify that when we speak next at the Q3 update, because indeed it's making good progress. I'm sorry, I don't have more details to disclose today.
No, that's fine, thank you. Can I just follow on with one more, sorry. In European AutoCats, are you seeing any improvement or is it really a sense of stabilization?
I would rather talk of stabilization at this juncture, and improvement will come next year with the introduction of Euro 6, which will have an effect on light-duty diesel and, of course, heavy-duty diesel as we enter this market. But it's definitely too early to talk of besides the effect of emission norms, I must say, it is too early to talk of a recovery. In Europe, stabilization is basically what we see today.
Final question. You said Euro 6 for light duty for next year will benefit the business. I thought it came in December, that particular piece of legislation for light duty. Is it the case that you expect auto manufacturers to be loading that earlier than the timetable, as usual?
Well, it will depend from one model to the other. There may be depends on the timing of launching or start of production of new models, because typically existing platforms are not being modified. So there may be some of that indeed, but I do not expect that to be a very significant proportion of the new Euro 6 business.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Peter Olofsson from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. First of all, question on the outlook statement. You referred a couple of times to signs in of stabilization in many of your end markets. However, looking at the H1 results and your full year guidance, the recurring EBIT in H2 will be flat to down 15%. Would you see that as a typical seasonality, or are there on the other factors that play a role there? And then maybe with regards to rechargeable battery materials, in light of all the expansion projects, could you shed some light on profitability in that business, and how long might it take for ROCE to exceed the cost of capital in that business?
Okay, Peter, first of all, the yes, there is some sort of seasonality in certain business groups, and that's been factored in the forecast and the outlook indeed. For our BM and for energy materials, broadly speaking, profitability is, as you could see from the figures we released for the first half of this year, is not where it should be. We're still below the cost of capital, and there is still quite a bit of investment that is taking place build the required capacity, production capacity, and technical capabilities for battery materials. And indeed, it will take another few years before we reach the desired profitability levels and exceed the threshold, which, as far as we're concerned, is that all of our business need to at least make more than 12% return on pre-tax return on capital employed. So it will take a bit more time because the wave of investments is not yet fully behind us.
Okay, and just to clarify what you said on the outlook, so it's mainly seasonality, what's driving H2 earnings below the first half, or are there other factors?
Well, I don't think we said explicitly that H2 would be below H1, because if you look at the range, it could still be at the same level. I'm just saying that, yes, there is in certain businesses some seasonality, with lower sales in the summer month and in December, and that is fully factored in the range indeed.
Okay, maybe you want to follow up on the footprint adjustments. You announced several plans in the second half of last year. Did you already see the full benefit of these plans in the first half results, or is there more to come? And did you initiate new initiatives in the first half?
We don't have yet the full benefits of the measures that were initiated in the course of last year, but we're getting close to that because in a number of cases the reduction in workforce were spread over time. So it's not the full effect, but close to that. And as I mentioned on previous occasions, this is will continue to be work in process. It's some sort of a never-ending task to make sure that our business units continuously adjust to market reality, and that may involve adjustments up or adjustments down. So that's the best answer I can tell you. Yes, it will continue because it's a feature of the business, has been a feature of the business, and will continue to be a feature of the business.
Okay, maybe one final question on the use of cash. You returned cash through a combination of dividend and share buybacks. How do you balance between the two?
I will let Philip answer that question.
Well, so typically, I mean, starting maybe with the interim dividend, as you know, that is not really a decision. It's basically half of the previous year dividend, and then the full year dividend is decided, obviously taking into account the full year results. Our dividend policy is basically to have a stable or gradually increasing dividend, so we do not have any targets in terms of payout. So we go for, let's say, a gradual improvement of the absolute amount of dividend payout. And then the buybacks is, I would say, is shouldering the dividend payout to make sure that we we remain to our commitment to return the cash to the shareholders.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Dominic Fuentes from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just a couple of short questions. Could you elaborate on the cost savings you achieved in the first half and any guidance there for the second half? And secondly, the impact of shutdowns and the investment costs in 2013. I know previously you didn't really want to comment on that, but could you put that into context so we can get a feeling for the base effect or the improvement we could potentially see in going into 2014, assuming that they won't reoccur? And the last one is the level of confidence in your own guidance, given that the outlook was given after the first quarter results, and you talked about limited likelihood of any near-term improvements in the market, and since then silver prices have fallen a further 20%, gold prices are down 14%, platinum down 8%, special metal prices have eroded as well. So what gives you the level of where do you get your confidence from that you will achieve this guidance in this environment? Thanks.
Dominic, let me start with the last question. First of all, let me also remind you that we have a number of hedges in place for this year that are actually mitigating the impact of the decline in metal prices that took place after the end of April discussion. And so that's one. This being said, you're right, there is going to be an effect. There is an effect because also some of the metal prices we're exposed to cannot be hedged, secondary metals, rhodium, etc. Indeed, I talked I mentioned the fact that there was no near-term improvement in sight when I gave the Q1 update. This being said, in the meantime, we have seen some signs of stabilization in a number of end markets, if not improvements. We see a number of improvements in sometimes a slight improvements in demand. We see a number of improvements in operating conditions. We have been working hard to improve our margins to mitigate the effects of the downturn that was affecting some of our businesses. I mentioned last time that we would also work hard at increasing prices in a selective manner. So we see a number of these measures that we have taken either to address costs or prices or both of them starting to take root, and that is combined with a slight improvement in certain areas, in volumes and overall demand. So that is one, and these series of improvements should help us offset some of the impact of metal prices that you outlined. And all in all, this gives me sufficient confidence that indeed we will be in the range that was mentioned back at the end of April. Plus, as you know, at this time of the year, we have a certain degree of visibility on how business should develop. In recycling, we have good visibility on the supply streams and supply contracts and the arrivals for the second part of the year. We have visibility on the offtakes for the next few months in automotive catalysts, etc. So I have sufficient elements to back that that level of confidence and to maintain the range that was given back in April. Unfortunately, regarding your other questions, I'm not going to disclose more information about cost savings. I mean, I didn't go there a few months ago. I'm not going to disclose more. Suffice to say that indeed, this is work in process. We continue to work hard at improving our cost base and making sure that all of our businesses be sufficiently competitive in that respect. It's a matter of cost, it's a matter of prices, etc. So there are a number of things that are, a number of efforts that are ongoing in order to address profitability issues where we have them. And then, in terms of shutdown. There will be a second shutdown indeed. There was an increase in volumes that we could process after the shutdown earlier this year in Hoboken. Throughput rates have improved in a non-negligible manner. But there are still quite a bit of investments that have to be done during the second shutdown this year. So I prefer to hold my response to until Q3 update, such that I have more visibility on how things work during the next investment phase and how the facility restarts after these technical modifications have been implemented.
Thanks. Just a quick follow-up on the restructuring charges for the second half. Will they be at a similar level as in the first half, so at around 11 million?
It's too early to tell, Dominic. Again, I mean, there may be a number of things in the pipeline, but I cannot comment more on this at this point in time.
All right, fair enough. Thanks, Mark.
Our next question comes from Dennis Lapidutu from Kempen. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I also have a couple of questions connected to recycling still. First of all, given how and what you know about recycling at this stage, meaning metal prices and your hedging book and also the visibility on supply streams, what do you expect to be the main earnings driver for profitability growth in recycling in 2014? Secondly, I would like to learn more about the developments on the cost base at recycling. Is the first half representative for the remainder of the year? And are there any incremental costs that could increase the average cost base further in 2014, maybe connected to extra investments in UHD development and so on? And the last question is related to waste streams. I was wondering what is the main waste stream that drove the growth in recycling volumes in the first half and how the profitability of refining this stream in particular compares to that of e-scrap and to that of spent automotive catalysts.
Okay, let me start with the first question. I mean, all other things remaining equal, or if you assume that all other things remain equal, volume should be a driver of growth in recycling, in the coming months and years. And again, I would like to hold my response in terms of quantifying that until the next shutdown and wave of investments have taken place, such that I can have firmer evidence and figures to be utilized to back that answer. But basically, the answer to your question is that we are working on driving volumes up.
Okay.
Secondly, I'm not sure I fully understood the question about costs. Can you repeat your second question about costs?
Yes. I was wondering if the cost-based recycling that we see in H1 is representative for the remainder of for H2 as well, basically, or if there are any incremental investments that could boost the fixed cost base further.
No, the cost base in H1 is representative.
Okay.
And there is nothing major. There is no major deviation to be expected going forward in the second half of this year.
Okay.
In terms of supply stream, what drove the volume growth in the first part of the year and will continue to do so in the short term is the increased supply of industrial byproducts from a number of industries, and in particular non-ferrous industries. You know that these are the residue streams that that constitute the bulk of our supply. I mean, streams coming from the PGM industry, the copper, lead, and zinc smelting and refining industries, etc., and also complex byproducts from the mining industry. So these were the main factors or the main sources where we had an increase in availability and processed volumes. And in those segments, things continue to look good in terms of supply, availability, and conditions. Now, I cannot tell you whether this is more or less attractive than e-scrap or than spent automotive catalyst. There are certain types of industrial residues. It all depends on the complexity of the materials. And certain types of industrial residues are more complex to treat than the most complex end-of-life material, and therefore attract or command a higher attract higher value and command higher margins. And sometimes it's the other way around. So I cannot give you a general answer there.
Okay. Maybe one follow-up. Assuming that precious metal prices stay at the level they are now, even considering volume growth from increasing throughput rates, would it be feasible to expect growth in recycling EBIT for 2014?
Dennis, I think it's too—it's actually premature to for us to comment on profitability in 2014. We typically only do that at the beginning of the year, and I don't see reasons this time around to deviate from that practice. So you will have to bear with us.
Okay, thank you very much for all the answers.
Our next question comes from Oliver Jopwo from PICTES. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Olivier Jopwo from PICTES. Thanks for taking my question. I do have a follow-up question on hedging, actually. And out of the 14.5 million you've booked as change in cash flow hedge reserves in H1, how much of that pertains to the change in fair value on your existing instruments and the change in the amount they recognize from the equity?
Basically, again, the amount relates to the amounts. Indeed, relates to what you see in the comprehensive income. That amount, the 12.7 million, is basically, let's say, the mark-to-market that is taken in equity for, again, part of the strategic hedges. So because
okay.
We have different types of strategic hedges, it all depends on how you account for them. So this is really part that is accounted for under cash flow hedging.
And what about the part which is transferred in P&L, recognized from the comprehensive income for expired contracts?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but so as we mentioned, the actual results of the hedges, when they are put in the P&L, are put in basically the operating income.
Yes, but you usually provide a split between a portion of existing contracts, which that actually remains in the equity, and a derecognized portion, which is transferred from equity to P&L.
I don't believe we have ever provided that. I'm looking around the table here, but I don't think we've.
But I've been reading that in your annual recount.
Then there must be a question of interpretation. So I propose that we take it up maybe after the call, and we're happy to give you the. It's
okay, I will follow up. Thanks.
Not the interpretation that should be given to it.
Our next question comes from Wim Hoss from KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions for me. First, on rechargeable battery materials, I was trying to get a better feel of your market position. You mentioned in the press release that you are well represented in current electrified platforms and continue to strengthen your position for upcoming platforms. You also mentioned to be in 15 platforms approximately that are on the market or about to hit the market. So could you maybe indicate whether for most of these platforms you are a single source supplier, what kind of a market share you expect to have given that you are in these 15 platforms, and also elaborate a little bit on new contracts that you have recently won for the next generation, which I assume is 2017 and beyond. That is the first question.
Thank you, Wim. So first, unlike in catalysis, where when you're qualified for a platform, you have 100% of that platform, in battery materials for electrified vehicles, it is not always the case. You have a mixed picture there. You have a number of platforms where you have a single source supply, and you have a number of platforms with dual supply sources. Depends on OEM choices and in some cases battery manufacturer choices that are being made in that respect. So I wouldn't say that we have overall, I would say, exclusive supply in the platforms for which we are qualified. Overall, things are moving along nicely, although, as you know, the penetration of electrified vehicles in the marketplace remains somewhat modest at this point in time. Our qualification work continues to make very good progress and is showing evidence that our technical leadership in this domain is paying off. I think it will be interesting to see how the market will develop in the next few years as a number of brands are now introducing a broader offering of electrified models in their lineup. And one of the limiting factors for market penetration so far has been the limited availability of models, of electrified models in the lineup, and this is likely to change in the next few years. And I think it will be interesting to watch how things develop following the introduction of a broad range of electrified models.
Okay. And then another question on catalysis. One of your competitors found the largest in the HED segments recently mentioned to see quite some portion of its revenue in HED already from Euro 6 compliance platforms. If I read well from your press release and also presentation, it seems that you are now kind of still in the investment phase and that revenue generation from Euro 6 related AGG still has to come most likely in 2014 only. Is that a correct assumption?
Indeed, it is correct. This is what I also said a while ago, that production ramp-up and revenue generation was mostly to start in 2014, and the picture is indeed unchanged.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Evgenia Molotova from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello, sorry, terribly sorry, it's me again. I just had one clarifying question on potential EBIT growth next year in recycling from the volume growth, because as far as I remember, you are quite limited in terms of potential volume growth in your smelter. So I understand that you are doing shutdowns in order to improve it, but as far as maybe I don't understand rightly, I said that the potential volume growth is around 4 to 5%. So in order to grow further, you will basically need to make considerable investments for another smelter. Is it correct, or I just completely don't understand the dynamics? Thank you.
The underlying assumption that this is a limiting factor now is right. Indeed, we have been working at full capacity for the past many years, and we have been gradually increasing capacity through marginal improvements, marginal in terms of capacity addition, and that's been realized through process improvements, etc. And indeed, the reasons we have two shutdowns this year is because there are more of these technical changes to be introduced in the process in order to drive capacity up. As I mentioned, one of these shutdowns has yet to take place, and I would like to reserve my response until I've seen how the investment is, the new investment will be working, and how the facility will operate once it restarts after the shutdown. So I should be able to provide you with more information and more guidance in terms of the size of the capacity improvement next time we talk in after the Q3 update.
Thank you.
And sorry, just to complete the answer, at the same time, hopefully I should be able also to provide more information about the broader capacity expansion plans that we have for the recycling business group.
Thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from Edward Donoghue from One Investments. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. It's just one question. I'm probably being very dim. I'm trying to put everything together, but it's on your largest division profitability, recycling, for next year. Bearing in mind what you said with regard to your hedging book for this year and the fact that historically you don't hedge as much going forward when prices are low, prices are lower now, how do you actually look to a potential improvement in the profitability for next year? Because I would have thought, all things being equal, you've basically had, and excuse the terminology, a degree of windfall gains coming through in refining profitability for 2013. You have those hedges rolling off. You don't, as you state, historically hedge as much going forward because prices are lower. Prices are lower, and if they stayed where they are at the moment, what is the bridge to get growth back in the profitability for refining for next year? Or should we be looking closer to roughly about 100, sort of a 200 million level for this kind of division, unless there is a dramatic change in the metals pricing?
Again, Edward, I'm not going to comment on the 2014 EBIT. We typically do not provide guidance on next year's earnings at this time of the year. Suffice to say at this stage that, like in the past, we continue to work on driving our capacities up through process improvements, new investments, etc., and at the same time constantly work on optimizing the supply mix. And indeed, this is the constant and works, I would say, supports the growth trends year in, year out. And while we do that, indeed, we are subject to certain fluctuations of metal prices in the short term as the market develops. But I'm not going to provide more guidance on 2014.
Okay. I mean, I understand that, and I wasn't looking for detailed guidance, and I appreciate that. I'm just trying to – is my thinking the wrong thinking direction, sort of directional in that way, or am I missing something, and that variable would be the volume which you are putting – the actions you've taken place this year would allow you potentially to be that offset – so if I go to slide 17 and I look at your recurring EBIT profitability for recycling, I'm having difficulties to sort of understanding how it plays out through the revenues and the EBIT on the basis of what you were saying today going forward.
I mean, it's a reality that that our business overall is more profitable when metal prices are higher and is less profitable when metal prices are lower. I mean, that's the nature of our recycling activities, whether they are conducted as part of the recycling business group or as part of the other activities. Indeed, that is how things work. And I can only recommend that you look at the trends and the figures of the past several years in recycling, and see how business results are developing in function of prices and capacity being added to the business. But clearly, the strategy is to continue to expand volumes and to optimize the mix of supply, while we are being exposed to the metal price fluctuations.
Okay, I'm going to have one last go to just get my brain on this again. If you took 2013 and you looked at the level of hedging that you potentially could have in place for 2014 and you applied that to 2013, would there be a major divergence in the profitability reported for this year?
Well, it's again, I'm not going to go there because I don't want to disclose the level of hedges that we have, and we have not done that in the past, and I'm not going to do that now. So I'm sorry, I cannot provide you an answer to that question.
Okay, that's very kind. I appreciate the help.
Our next question comes from Marc De Brouwer from Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Marc, Philippe. I will not bother you with hedging in recycling, but just a quick question on rechargeable batteries. You mentioned an issue for NMC materials. Do we have to understand, given the technology involved and the CapEx involved, that it is purely a punctual issue?
Sorry, Mark, I didn't understand the question.
No, you mentioned in the press release something in relation with the NMC cathode materials for rechargeable batteries. Given the CapEx involved and technology efforts, do I have to understand that it is purely a punctual issue?
Okay, the demand for NMC was down in portable electronics. That's what you refer to.
Exactly.
Ah, okay. Difficult to say whether it's punctual or structural because it depends on... basically, NMCs are typically used in portable electronics in cylindrical cells that are used in notebook computers, while... high-density lithium cobalt-based materials is used in smartphones and tablets, and this is because you need much thinner battery packs, typically flexible battery packs. So there's been a trend in favor of higher energy density lithium cobalt to the detriment of the NMCs being used in cylindrical cells. So I would say it's more a trend than a punctual event, in a way. And,
okay.
And the NMC investments that we are making are really focused on automotive uses.
All right. That's important for me to understand, because otherwise there would be an issue. Okay.
No, indeed, you're right, yes.
Because I noticed that all CapEx today were in relation with NMC. All right. Thank you very much.
That's correct, but it's mostly automotive related.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Jack Yayak from Millennium. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just one question. In Note 6, you talked about the changes in cash flow hedge reserves of 14.5 million euros from forward commodity contracts. Is there somewhere where you talk about what the P&L impact is, so the impact on EBIT? Just want to understand that because the guidance you gave is on EBIT, but I guess 14.5 isn't what goes into the EBIT, so I'm just wondering what is the actual EBIT impact from this forward commodity contract?
Yep. So just again, the what you have in the comprehensive statement, comprehensive income statement, is basically the fair value change in the existing part of the existing strategic hedges. Okay. So those are hedging instruments that we have in place that basically still will, at a certain point in time, go to the P&L. To your second question, we do not specify the impact of our strategic hedges on P&L, i.e. on the operating income.
Okay, thank you.
Our final question comes from Peter Olofsson from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, I had one question left about the battery recycling business. In the press release, you mentioned that you had secured additional contracts from EV manufacturers. Can you disclose how many contracts you have and what the typical length of the contract is?
I wouldn't know the number of contracts out of the top of my head. I would have to find it out. We have already quite a number of contracts in place. This being said, I would like to repeat that business, real commercial and industrial scale business, is not for today, is not for tomorrow. It's a number of years away. The positioning is taking place now, and that's why we continue to monitor and to report on the progress we are making. However, business is years away because you need first the electrified vehicles to hit the road, then to be on the road for a number of years before the battery comes up for recycling. So I don't have really information to give you that you can use in any model because the industrial scale business is probably beyond the horizon of your model, I'm afraid.
Okay, but you say the business is years away. Does that mean that the contracts have also quite sizable length?
Absolutely, indeed.
And are these exclusive contracts?
In a number of cases, yes, it is exclusive contracts. Yeah, and you know, it's the quantities that are going to be processed in the short and medium term are really prototype size. And so it would be very costly and complicated to divide that over a number of processors, because it's really very limited volumes, indeed.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions.
Okay, in this case, I would like at this point in time to thank everyone for your participation, and of course we'll have a chance of meeting with most of you in the coming days, so we'll have a chance to elaborate of most of the topics that were addressed today during the call. In the meantime, please feel free to send your questions or your follow-on questions or any other questions to our investor relations team. They will be more than happy to address them, and this being said, I look forward to seeing you shortly. Thank you again, and bye-bye.